こんにちは。
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 今日は特別編なので文字起こしを同時にリリースしています。ゲストに瞑想とヨガのマスターニルマルさんにお越しいただいています。イエイ。
はい、ありがとうございます。 Thank you.
ようこそ。
Thank you for having me.
マイケルはお会いしたことがあるんだよね。
Yeah, several years ago.
Yeah, I think we met in yoga studio.
Yeah, Futaki, I
yes, that's right.
Introduced me to your class. Yeah. And I struggled to
yoga poses
with some of those poses, with some of the poses. Yeah. But I had a great time. So
thank you.
That's nice. ネパールご出身なんですよね。
あ、そうです。私ネパール人で、まあ、日本に来たのは結構、まあ、2003年に来たんですけど、うん、はい、ヨガとか瞑想とか言われるといきなりみんなインド人かなとイメージが強いので、うん、まあ、私はネパール人です。
うん、なんか私ネパールもインドも行ったことがなくて、
あ、そうですね、
こうあまりイメージがついてないんですけど、
なるほど。
こうよく気づくのは道を歩いてると、はい、こうレストランとかで、はい、インドネパール料理みたいな、はい、こう一緒になってることが多い気がしていて、
東京のことですよね。
そうです、そうです。
そうですね、多分、インディアンフードっていうのが、まあ、世界中に知られて、
うん、
まあ It's a royal food って感じで、うん、まあ、広がった時があったんですけど、でそこに大体まあ、料理を作ったりする人がほとんど、まあ、ネパール人になったりとかして、うん、でネパールそのフードっていうのがインディアンスパイスをもちろん使うんだけど、ちょっとインドで違って like a Chinese Tibetan test が入ってるんですよね、
うんうんうん、
That's why we have like a dumpling and fried noodles、うん、チャーミンとかトッパとか、
あ、そっか、
はい、そういうことあるのでインディアンスパイス使ったこうところなんですね、うん、でそれを、まあ、やっと最近皆さんもネパール料理っていうのがちょっと分かってきたの でそこまでには多分インド料理で言っても実はネパール人がやってた。Yeah, it was very, I was shocked too when I came. I was like, okay, what do you mean?
Well, India is a very large country.
It is.
A very big population.
Yeah.
It's like Nepal is...
It's 26 times bigger than Nepal. India is 26 times.
Wow.
Like from Japan, if you have to compare, then one third of Japan, that's small, is Nepal.
そっか。ネパールはあれですよね。中国とインドの間、
そうですね。
間っていうか挟まれてる感じです
ね。その通りです。We are landlocked country. 本当に海もない、何もなくて、上の方が全部ヒマラヤ山脈、like all the mountains, the Tibet のその大きいボーダーで、で、and the down south part is like all India, from the 三つのところからもインドで、It's landlocked.
Yeah. So some of the best climbers in the world are from Nepal, right?
True, because we have like out of 10 big mountains in the world, we hold 8 of them.
So, yeah. Well, I saw they had done some analysis of Nepalese genetics, and they have a certain ability to withstand high altitude very
That's
well.
That's true. I mean, not me, because
not
I
you?
Belong to not me. Because I belong to like more toward the lower land, but maybe that goes to like a Sherpa. Maybe you have heard about it. They are really good at it because they do born in more than somewhere 4,000 meter above the ground sea level. So their power is amazing. That's why many of the Sherpas hold without having the gas, I mean oxygen, and they climb Mount Everest, which is just impossible for anyone to think about it.
しかもすごい荷物をね持って、
そうなんですよ。
しかも人の分まで持ちますもんね。
そのために歩くと思うんですね。人の分を持って歩くん
ですよね。
それが仕事。
自分のためじゃないから。
はい、導いてくれるのもまず一番目ことなんですけど、でもさらにみんなの荷物を持ってって、はい、歩いたりしてます。
すごすぎる。
There's documentaries.Like some of the best documentaries are not showing the craziest part, which is the guy carrying the camera, Sherpa carrying the camera, which is like, right? So they're filming the documentary, but the guy filming it is actually doing the most intense climb.
Yeah. 確かに。ネパール行ったことないよね、マイケルもね。
No.
そう、なんかイメージが。
It's interesting. Like,People from all over the world fly there to like, because it's the highest part on the entire planet.
That's right.
You know, so it's it's a very unique and special place, I think.
Especially even in Japan, Nepal is not that known. Now, there are lots of people who know about Nepal.
Mm.
But even in Japanese text, this is like Buddha was born in India, and India is big and big culture. So they all think like Nepal is also part of India. If they know anything about Nepal, such as like Mount Everest or, you know, Buddha or anything, they just come up thinking like it's part of India. But the truth is Nepal was always independent and never been, you know, colonized by, which is India was colonized by the British for more than 250 years. So they were fighting all time. Gorkhas was fighting all time. Mm. The big warrior are known as Gurkha. I don't know if you heard.
I don't think so.
No? Okay. It's called a Gurkha. Gurkha is one of the best warrior in the world. And still now in England, the royal family and everyone's, they have this Gurkha who do the all guarding things for them. And there is also the group of Gurkha British Army.
Huh.
Which is very unusual because army can only, the, you know, national citizen can be the army people in the country. But somehow the Nepalese people are doing guard in England.
そう、本当面白いんですよ。なんかこうネパールのレストランはすごいいっぱい隣にあるから、ネパールの人もいっぱい東京にいるんだろうなと思いつつ、最近増えてますね。あの、私は2003年に来たんですけど、そこよりは結構増えてますね。私もよく会いますたまに。なんかそのコミュニティみたいな感じもあります？ありますね。
We call NRN, which is like non-residential Nepalese, which means they don't live in Nepal but they live in abroad, and they have this small community. They do like lots of festival, and they have interesting, like now they have small machi, like Neparu machi. It's in Shin Okubu in near Shinjuku. It I think used to known by the Korean market, Korean town, but it's slowly changing with the Nepalese market.
Oh, so
I haven't been there recently. Might have to check it out.
Yes, there are so many like restaurants, maybe 15 of them in the small, you know, one station. And then they have like a dancing club, Nepalese restaurant, the small goods and souvenir things and the spice and all kind of fresh vegetable. And sometimes,
So what was it like growing up in Nepal? And, you know, before you came over here, before all of this, you know, just being a kid in Nepal, like what was that like?
Well, I was born in Brahmin family. We have a caste. I don't know if you guys know about the caste or not, but still exists. But, and I was belonging to the Brahmin family. And usually the Brahmin families have a, like a kind of disciplined routine life, you know, like you just go through your ritual things and practice. You listen to your parents and be very much of close to the nature, most of, I would say, like which is chanting, praying, meditation, and obviously, you know, not eating meat or eating any or drinking alcohol or those kind of things. And you have to be very strict regime kind of life. And I was enjoying it, actually. I was enjoying it very much. And I was lucky because I was born in that yoga ashram. My grandfather is my master. And he built this place to practice yoga for everyone before I was born. So I was born there. And it's very lucky for me that I started to learn so many good things in early age. Because whenever I teach now, people say like, oh, I wish I was doing this thing in my early 20s or 18 or 19. So I could change, but now I'm already old and it's my body stiff, you know. And I have a certain character already built up in me. So they say like, oh, you are so lucky you got to know about these things in the early age. So my childhood was very good, very memorable, and so many interesting things, actually.
じゃあもうちっちゃい時からヨガをやって育ったっていう感じですね。そうですね。あの、まあ、ブラミンのうちで、まあ、ヨガの道場の中で生まれたので、あの、ちゃんとした練習したのは9歳ですけど、遊んだのはもっと小さいからと思うんですよ。なんかそのカースト制度って聞くと、私の中ではこう、職業みたいな、職業と結びついてるみたいな印象なんですけど、その、今のお話だとこう、
ブラミンっていうのが、あの、ブランマーと一緒につながるっていうことなんだけど、ブラミンはだいたい勉強したりとか、ベーダを読んだりとか、あと王様のその、アドバイザーとか、アドミニストレーションとか、そっちに、 まあ、知識を持っている人々という感じで、職業はブラミンのそっちですね。このアドバイスをしたりとか、
何個ぐらいに分かれてるんですか？
ね、もともと4つあって、あのブラミン、チェトリ、バイシャ、シュドラって4つあるんだけど、さらにその中にブラミンはブラミンで、あのチェトリとかなるとこう戦う人とか、あの王様になるとか、そういうところの方で、でチェトリ、それでバイシャっていうのが、あの物を売ったりとか物を作ったりとかして、スドラというのは一番下なので、あのもう汚い仕事みたいな感じで、まあ、トイレをきれいにしたり靴をしたりとか、あの掃除したりとかいう感じで、あの分けてるんですよね。
じゃあ今でも例えば、この仕事に就きたいんだったらこのカーストじゃないとなれないとか、
そこまでは最近変わってますね。あの、多分昔はそうだったと思うので、私もまあ自分の例えば学校行ったりとかするといろんなところから友達になっているので、まあ、ちょっと変わってますね。それはその通りではなくなってきた。
ちなみにその友達とかと話していて、はい、その自分のカーストを友達に言うとか、はい、友達にどのカーストか聞いたりとか、
ね、あの名字でわかるんですよ。
そうな
ん、そう、今でもその名字を見ると、はい、それでどのカーストの人なのかっていうのはもう分かる。
分かる。え、なんかついてるとか、はい、例えば何の言葉で終わってたらこれとかっていうことですか？どういうふうに分かる？
あの、例えば私の名前はニルマルラージ・ゲワリってなるんだけど、そのゲワリってなるともみんなブラミンのことになったりとか、あのスレシタとかそういう真ん中のところとか、そのチェトリアの名字があって、でスドルというのものの名字があるんですよ。だからそれを、まあ、フルネームを、多分昔の日本もそうだったと私聞こえたんだけど、いつかに名字が全部混ざっちゃって、あの好きな名字作ることの時代になって、でみんな好きにつけてたらもう分からなくなっちゃったって、ネパールはまだそれはあります。
そうか、
そう、名字で分かるんです。
だから聞かなくても、はい、もう一発でバレちゃうというか、分かっちゃう。
うんうん、分かりますね。
そうか。え、その例えば階級が違う同士で結婚したりとか、
昔はまあ無理なことだったんですけど、今はそんなことなくてもみんな自由に動いてますね。
あ、そうか、
はいはい、
え、日本みたいに結婚したら名字が変わるとか、はい、
変わりますね。旦那さんの方に奥さんの名字が、
あ、そうか、
はい、変わってきます。
じゃあそれで、まあ、ある意味カースト移動できるというか
ですけど、面白いの話は、例えばブラミンがあの下のカーストにあの結婚されて、まあ、例えばですよ、私が違う、まあ、カーストの女の子に結婚されると私が下がっちゃうんですよ。
あ、下に合わせていかないといけない。
そうなんですよ。上の方に持つくのはもう無理です。
あ、できないんだ。
できなくて下の方になって、
そういうハッキングはできないのあ、そっか。え、じゃあある意味それでちょっと躊躇したりすることもあり得る。
躊躇って
、例えばそのヘジテイ、あ、この人と結婚したら自分が下になってちゃうからやめようかなみたいな、
まあ、あるんでしょうかね。私はあのそんなにあれないけど、でも、そういうことになるのはやっぱり after when they are in true love、 そうなると多分何も関係なくなっちゃうんじゃないかな。
そんなにその実際どれぐらい実害があるというか、例えば一番下のカーストだったら、
はい、
一番上の人と比べて何ができないとかっていう、どれぐらい制約が出てくるんですか？
昔の話すると、もう本当に例えば一緒に座ることもできないし、触ったりすることもできないし、まあ、その人が触った水とかご飯とかも食べられないっていうところまであるんですけど、でも今はそんなことないですね。もう街に誰が何を作ってるのか、何を持ってきてるのか、どうしてるのかっていうのが、まあ、多分無理になってきたと思います。
そうか、
うん、
じゃあもう今はあんまり関
係ない。今はそうですね、結婚のことも結構緩くなっちゃったりしてるから、まあ、そういう触ったりすることはもう全くなくて、でも村に行ったりして、多分おじいちゃんとかなればまだまだ嫌ってなる方は、はい、反対される方はいると思います、ね、
そうかそうか、
はい、It may be stronger in India as well because it's so large.
It's true.
And
yeah,
more diverse.
Yeah, very much. I mean, even in India, it's the same. They have a forecast, and still, especially in India, the whole village is belong to one caste. So they have even, yeah, big fight kind of things all the time. Because if one guy is fall in love with another town lady and they got married, you know, then they even kill people to protect their
right.
Like,
well, caste. I studied. Indian and Hindu religion in university.
I see.
And I don't remember anything because there's just so many names and stories.
True.
And it was, but there was, I was surprised by the the status of these warriors mm-hmm. in these stories mm-hmm. and these the Vedas and it was it's so important to the people of Nepal and of India too. Mm-hmm. Whereas other countries or cultures, they don't have that level of appreciation or attention mm-hmm. for their their stories and their
lineage.
Their lineage.
Yeah.
So I found that quite interesting. And and the teacher was just so passionate about it.
People have a bit of pride on them. I mean, not only like a Brahmin to being in the upper caste, but like the warrior family, they have their own pride. They know that the Brahmins are higher rank, but they think they are the more brave ones. Mm-hmm. And the one who is like who fall to the third categories, and they have their own pride because they think that they are the only one who can do that. And the similarly, who are the very lowest ones, such as they make all these jewelries, they make the clothes, they design like all the, handicraft items, like making house and everything. They do hold their own pride. I mean, it's not they are lower caste, but they know that they are, but they have their own pride. Like, if I don't make this house, no one can do it, you know? If I don't make your ring, you cannot wear it. If I don't show your clothes, you cannot have a clothes. So they have their own pride.
面白い、その国の中で4つのチームみたいに、こうみんなが分かれていて、そこにみんな属しているっていう。
まあそうですかね。
なんかそこでこうチームとしてのプライドみたいな。
みんな持ってる。
っていうのはすごく面白いですよね。あんまり想像もできないというか。
It's interesting how it's mediated by like religion and culture instead of like really direct sort of government intervention or something. Yes. You know?
I think that was more like a very much of a political way to convince people in a religious pattern. That what I really feel that way.
その政府の中の人っていうのは、そのカースト的には偏ってたりするんですか？
そうですね。今もみんな結構言って、で下のカーストの人はあんまりないよって言われて、下の人のカーストもちょっとチャンス与えてくださいっていうことで、今 30% ぐらいは下の人を取り入れようっていう考えは出たりとかしてるんですけど、そのイクアリティのために。だから、まあ、それあるってこと自体はやっぱりこう下のカーストの人はあんまり上にいないよっていうことだったと思うので、はい、今はそういう割合でやろう。日本の例えばフィメールメールの時に 30% of females would be in government like the voices there, so it's kind of same.
そうかそうか。でその残りの3つの中では結構、まあ、まあまあ分配されてる感じですか？
というよりもそうですね、あの一番下の方が一番低いっていうのがありますけどね、あの the lower chance for the the lower caste people.
How about for women?
Yeah, it's so hard. I mean, in practically, like in politics, women are not that much, and still, government is appealing like 30% of females should be into the government and they should run. But the interesting thing is, like, if you look at like Michael was saying, when he did a Hindu's culture and everything, when you studied, probably you have noticed that in Hinduism, there is goddess. And the goddess here, they represent the feminine energy. And if you look at it more closely, I find it so interesting because in all the good power is given to a feminine energy, such as there is a goddess of education, but there is no god of education. And the goddess is called a Saraswati. She is like beautiful, holding the book in her hand and the big, this instrument called a Bina. And she's just relaxing and giving all the energy like to all those who are her devotees, they pray for her. And there is another goddess called Lakshmi. She's a goddess of wealth. But there is no god of wealth, it's only goddess. And her name is Lakshmi, and she's also beautiful, sitting into the big lake with a beautiful lotus and blessing with all the gold coin and things and ornament, and she's fully that. So whoever is devotee of her, they get all the wealth and the blessing from her, And there is a goddess of power. It's called Durga. And there is no god of power, And when I see all this, it basically try to teach us that there is a feminine energy is more important energy and you should respect that. So in Brahmin, when I was taught like to respecting to your mother and respecting to your sister, it's a very interesting because like we are five siblings and I have an elder sister and I'm the second one. And I have two younger sisters, and there is one younger brother. So I have seen in my family too, and others too, like I am a boy, I'm a man, and I can, if I do any kind of mistake, I can be easily get punished. Even I can get a slap, you know, easily like, why you did this, and it's not good. But never seen any of my sister being punished. I'm not comparing, but it makes me think about it, like, oh, wow, okay, you cannot... hit, you cannot beat, you cannot say something bad to your, I mean, sometimes they make a loud voice and say like, oh, you should not do this, you know?
Yeah. But,
okay, why is only me who get kicked? And they just get like, you know, scold and then they are fine, you know? And it's like, okay, because that's culture teaches us to respect women. But I'm sure it's not equally applicable to the every family or to the whole nation. In the nation-wise, maybe there is a lack of awareness, and especially into the lower caste, maybe it's not applied. You know, they just have a violence and so many things. But traditionally, in culture, what they teach is really good thing.
So yoga itself comes from Hinduism in a sense, right?
I would say that because for me, it has nothing to do with religion because I always say yoga is science and I'm scientist and my body is a laboratory, so I can experience all time in my body. But if I have to talk about as all the books and all everything is, give all the reference to our Hinduism, like even the god of yoga is known as Lord Shiva. So I have to say it is the base on Hinduism,
Nepal は仏教とヒンドゥー教ですか？
ですね、ネパールに仏教とヒンドゥー教の違いがないんですよ。There is no difference between Buddhism and Hinduism. なんでかと言いますと、あの仏教が始まったのが仏様が生まれた後に、after Lord Buddha was born, and で仏様自体はヒンドゥーのお家に生まれたもんですね。
そっか。
お釈迦様っていうのが、その、Lord Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama. He was born in a Hindu family, so he was learning all the Vedas and all Upanishad, which we learn today. But then after he enlightened, he just created a more simpler path than the Vedas. Veda の中では、it's like a muri, it's so many...thing inside, like you said, like you read it and you get lost.
They have like it's several, there's like five books or something, and they're all very, 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 very long.
And it's like Rig Ved, Sam Ved, Yajur Ved, Athar Ved, the four are the big one, and then they have other ones. And then that was like a big jungle, you know, you just get lost easily. But for me,
so many gods too,
God and goddess, like a thousand and thousand, you know.
Do people have favorites?
They do, I think. I'm sure they do. They do. So in Buddhism, like Lord Buddha created one simple path with like eight principles and so many things to easy to understand. So then it becomes Buddhism. So if you go to Nepal, then you'll see there is a temple where the Hindus god and goddess, and there is a small monastery at the same place. So the people pray for the Shiva or Ganesha or Lakshmi goddess, god. At the same time, they pray for Lord Buddha. So, and also they regard Buddha as a 10th incarnation of Lord Vishnu. So Hinduism, they consider Buddha is part of Hindu.
Oh, okay.
So they have no barrier between the Hinduism and Buddhism.
そっか。
So.
だから別にそこでこう、どっち派とかっていうことにはなってない。なるほど。
ネパール人にはそうです。それは仏教とヒンドゥー教は一緒。
一緒。面白い。
So where do you find yourself, like spiritually or religiously? Are you a devout Hindu or do you, like how do you think of yourself?
It's interesting things because Hindu is a very new word. Very new word. And actually, it has no meaning and it has no sense as well. Because when I was like doing all the study, I was trying to figure out like what does Hinduism means, because every word has their meaning in Sanskrit. So Hinduism is given us by foreigners, such as British people. They gave us this Hinduism. Because before that, it's called a Sanatan. the religion itself called Sanatan. And what is Sanatan? Sanatan is there is only one Almighty God, and we all are His children. That's called Sanatan. And when people were following this, like yoga also comes from Sanatan. It doesn't come from Hinduism in reality. So where the Hindu comes from, it comes from when someone was doing his rituals in the bank of river, and some of this Buddhist asked, like, what's happening, what's going on? And somebody wanted to interpret to him, somehow the bank of the river was called Indu River. There is a river called Indu. And he simply said, like, oh, this is Indu River. They are doing their cultural things. And for the British guy, it becomes, oh, he couldn't say Indu. It's hard for them to just pronounce Indu. And it becomes Hindu. And today I am Hindu. And so, like, this doesn't make sense to me. So, watashimasugoku, I just asked all my master, all the great people, and they said, like, oh, you asked so hard question to us. And it's like, why it's so hard for you to tell? Like, Hindu means, but only few people, they agree with this, and they, because we have a dictionary. If you look at the dictionary, there is no word called Hindu. I was so surprised, the ancient dictionary. In Sanskrit dictionary, there is no Hindu word. And I was like, what's happening, you know? And then later now, of course, they have this Hindu word and they teach into the school and everything, like from 100, 200. But the people are here having longer history than 200. So when I look at the ancient one, and there is nothing called Hindu. But everything, if there is a religion, they denote, like the ancient Veda, it all goes to Sanatan. So the Sanatan was the main. So looking from there, I also feel that I'm the same, like there is Almighty One God, and I'm His children, like we all are, and we all are same. That's how I feel. Yeah. Rather than
その歴史的に最初はその昔は一神教だったっていうこと。
そうですね。昔はあのそのサナタンっていうのがそのベーダとかの元はサナタンですね。ヒンドゥじゃないんですよ。
でそこからその神の数がめっちゃ増えた。
神の数はサナタンの中にも入ってますよ。
Okay.
Not only it's Hinduism. その言葉単語だけが変わったんだけど、元々あるものは一緒あるんですよ。
Okay.
So,
その
It's kind of like the Native Americans were called Indian.
Right.
Because, but from outsiders who just had an idea.
Columbus,
it's just
a
coincidence, right? And he thought he was in India when he wasn't.
Yeah.
And then people just kept using the word for like hundreds of years.
Indiana, and now it's Indiana and Indian and Red Indian. Now sometimes they call Red Indian, but the real Indians are in India, not in the States.
Yeah.
But you said like there was only one God. And
which is supreme, almighty.
Okay.
But there is other... okay, let me tell you this. There is a head of family or head of country who is like, let's say, king. But then in his administration, there are so many administrative officers.
Okay.
So when I was talking earlier about the goddess of wealth or education or power, so they are like the small administrator who do look after everything,
oh,
you know?
Okay.
And now they are also called as god and goddess.
Okay. その上に一人の人がいる。
もともとは一人しかいませんよってことです。
なるほど。
There is a without form, without name, without anything, which is, that's what we call almighty, like who has all powers and...
Is that just like the universe?
Exactly. You can say different way, like you can say oneness, you can say big spirit, you say universal soul, big awareness, anything that...
That's really cool.
So what do you think happens when people... die, like
we have a reincarnation. I do strongly believe in reincarnation, and I have experience as well. So,
like
please
what?
Share.
まあ日本語で言うと輪廻っていうことですよね。その死んだらまた帰ってくる。
私たちがWe have like this body right now, and we see this body, but behind this body, we have our mind, like we think all the time, and that we express from our body, and behind that mind, we have this feelings, this like our emotions here, and we feel something, and that feelings take shape into the thoughts, and then thoughts now take shape into the action. So the body is action. Body does actions. Mm-hmm. And before that, we keep on thinking, oh, shall I do, shall I go, shall I eat or not? But before that, we have this feeling. Such as, let's say you are hungry. Hunger is a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come up like, oh, I won't need to eat. And then you go and grab some food. So if you look at the process, then something is happening inside, which is only in the feeling. Mm-hmm. And it comes into the shape of thoughts. And then now this goes into the action, which is body here we do. So is there anything beyond the feeling, or where does this feeling comes from? Then we have to think about it. Okay, yes, if there is, then must be something there. If we haven't discovered what it is, doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Mm.
Because now the science has done so much of great development and have proven us that if you don't feel it, doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It might be there. You need to discover it. Until you discover, you don't know.
Mm.
So inside that feelings, we have this our real self. And this self is immortal. Why? It's because it is not, the mortality comes from the matter. When anything which has a form, shape, kind of things, a matter, then it has a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
And the time things always keep on die and reborn and again and again. So physical body, this mind and emotions, can it is always in a reincarnation form. If we think about it this way, that let's say energy,
mm-hmm.
which is an atom, let's say, how long the atom lasts? What is the lifespan of atom? People say 7 billion years or something because it's still existing there. It doesn't die, you know. If one atom cannot die, then how can we die? What the atom does, atom always keeps on changing its form from one to another.
Mm-hmm.
So the body also, the soul also, not body, sorry, soul also keeps on changing it from one to another.
Right. What do you think the relationship is between the fundamental soul,
mm-hmm.
as you're calling it,
yeah.
and the form that we have now? Like how much of our form can be carried,
mm-hmm.
Transcend the death barrier, I guess? How much of us can be reincarnated, you know?
Each and everyone. It's not like someone or someone cannot, because we all are from the same component, the same energy. Mm. We all have a soul inside.
But it's just this like deep soul part that lives on, right?
Yeah.
It's
not, you mean not sort of just the, your like your habit or something? Like
yeah.
Character, so, you mean?
Like Michael っていう人の何パーセントが、like 100%. Reincarnate state no ka, like 70% ぐらいなのか。
Like the way I put my pants on in the morning,
yeah.
is that going to be the same?
Or was I reborn again? Yeah. It's a good question. Because let's say people always talk about the material things.
Mm-hmm.
And the material things, and they say like, oh, why you want to possess material things? Because you cannot take with you when you die.
Mm-hmm.
Then the question comes after, okay, what do we carry when we die then?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Then the answer is, yes, the material things has a limit.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
It stay with us up until it has to be with us. And one day when we die, we leave everything behind. Okay, then is there anything that we carry forward? Can we carry something into our next life? Then yes, there are so many things that we can carry into our next life. Okay, what are those things? Those things are known as a character. Like the physical body is made of like atomic body. So the atomic body, when it dies, it just die here.
Mm-hmm.
Which means in next life, let's say, Michael, you might have these eyes or you may not have these eyes. Okay. You might have this skin, you might not have this skin. That doesn't determine from this body.
Right.
Okay. But what you will carry in your next life, we all do, is our like a character, which is our, let's say, your learning, your understanding, your realization, your experience, your emotion. This will be carried to your next life.
And how have you verified this, or how do you come into contact with this notion through, you know, your meditation or like, because sometimes when, you know, I've tried meditating and I don't know if I'm doing it right. I don't know if you can, but awareness is a very strange thing.
Yeah.
And when you bring yourself into like the real here and now, the present moment where you're just like, it's very intense, right? And just observing and sort of, so the question that a lot of people have, a lot of scientists, a lot of researchers, mm-hmm. a lot of philosophers have, is can we tell, you know, whether we have free will or how much control do we have over ourselves? Mm-hmm. And do you know what I'm trying to say?
Like, yeah.
So
you're watching to mommy, so I don't know if she understands, but I understand.
Okay, yeah. Great. Well, I want to know what you think about this. So.
It's a very good question because what we have in human being is not only our limbs we have, not only the five senses we have, but we have something beyond that. Okay, and what is that? Is like our awareness is the most intense and powerful tool, things that the human being have right now. So this awareness is something that will give you most of things that you want in your life. Usually what happens is we live into the three different state in the mind. The awareness is a combination of our mind, intellect, and ego. Okay, when these three things combines together, that's what we call our awareness. So the mind itself do not have any power, mind itself. It's a stronger tools, but itself is nothing. Which means it has no power to think of good or bad, even to say true or false. That's why now you can see like virtual reality. You put something in your in front of your eyes and your five senses like your ear, yeah. and you feel like you're in the mountain. Yeah. Your mind tells you are in the walking in the mountain or swimming in the sea, and you feel that you experience those things. But is it real? No, you are in your chair, and you are in, there is a deck in front of you. There is no ocean in front of you, actually. Mm. But see, the mind cannot make any difference. Mm. When you take out your goggles and it's like, oh, that was good experience, and you just walk through, yeah. because immediately mind changes. Mm. So the mind actually has no power to decide anything. Which is good or bad or right or wrong. It is simply a tool that will allow you to experience things. It's through your five senses. Or then what guides to your mind? What is beyond your mind? Who is like dragging it or telling it? That is called our intellect and ego. The mind is always tossed between intellect and ego. And this awareness is here. What is the difference between intellect and ego? Intellect is like whenever any thoughts appears to our head, mind wants to go either A side or B side. And if the mind is guided by the reason behind it, like, do I drink water? Oh, I may drink it. I may not drink it. Okay, I like it, so let me drink. So when I say I like it, then my ego is telling me. My intellect is not activated there. Oh, I'm thirsty and I need a water. I have a reason to drink the water, which is I'm thirsty. Then my intellect is working there. So the, in between this intellect and ego, mind is always toasted. And many people go through the intellect and ego, either knowing or unknowing. So when mind always follow our ego, which is liking, disliking, and our memories, which is stored into our consciousness. Okay? Then this mind is unaware. Because the system of mind is made such a way that mind can be guided with awareness, or it always comes into the default mode, which is autopilot mode. Because body need to keep on moving all time, and mind need to be active all time, such as our like autonomic nerve systems, breathing, digestion, talking, feelings, five senses. They all continuously keep on working without having any awareness. You're watching something, but you can simply watch it, or you can put your awareness and watch.
Right.
When you put your awareness, that's called mindful. Bringing your mind with your awareness. And that is the most powerful tool. Because most of our time, we spend like 80 to 90% our mind works into the subconscious state. Sometimes it goes to the unconscious state. And only the awareness state is 10%. So that's why we are not aware about the power of this consciousness, because we're not using it. We are only using it like 10%. But most of the time, our mind works being unaware or subconscious state. So that's why, yes, as you said, awareness is very, very powerful tool. If we become aware of anything, we can just make it most of things happens.
How can we use our awareness, and how do you... how can we become more aware? Mm-hmm. And sometimes for me, I feel like awareness is paralyzing, or it can make me feel more anxious, you mm-hmm. know, to sort of, when you observe yourself in particular, sort of a third person way or a fourth person, who knows how many persons away,
yeah,
where, you know, you feel like you're watching yourself watch yourself, and you feel like you can put layers of separation between yourself mm-hmm. and like your feelings, or you can have a random thought,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can just think purple, you know, turtles or something, and you can just watch these, you know, whenever I sit still and try to focus on my breath or something, you know, I'll see these random ideas uh-huh. Uh-huh. just kind of come through
okay.
and you just kind of let them, like, how are you, what should we be doing with this stuff?
See, there is one good saying they call, the more you practice, the stronger you become.
Hmm.
So what's happening nowadays that we talk about, like 90% we live our life without awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so like when we eat, when we walk, when we talk to the people, it all coming this power from our subconscious mind or the unconscious mind. So in subconscious mind and the unconscious mind, there are so many things has been stored after life and right. life and life, everything.
Mm.
For example, if you are using the same train to go your office and coming back all time, think about this small situation. That why you just keep on getting into the same entrance and you take the same stairs or elevator, which is, you know, very close mm-hmm. to your, and you go into the train in the platform and you stand in the right to the seventh box, third door, and then waiting there. Where does this come from? It comes from subconscious mind. Mm-hmm. You know, something is like refreshing to you. And this is how we all live all our life. So there are so many things has been stored, but is the same principle will happen when you go to the new place. It's a new station. If you have to, like, today I have to come here, I have no idea. Mm. I've never been here, you know.
Mm.
And I have to be more aware about, like, okay, which way to go, which station did I take, and which exit I go. And, yeah, Google helps sometimes. So you have to be more aware than that helps.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you just have to be more aware. And this is the time that I'm using my awareness.
Mm.
The most of time, I'm not using my awareness when it's not necessary. So that's why we become so stronger to be unaware. Mm. Because 90% of our brain is going back. And only 10% in our life, we become aware of anything. Even I'm talking right now, I teach yoga, meditation, maybe you do your own job. 80-90% you'll repeat the same thing every day. In this keyboard, you'll repeat the same word, same sentence, many times. And when this happens, it's called from all unawareness, like subconscious mind. But then when we started to put this awareness there, as you said, like you sit down, start to watch your breath, then the subconscious mind will pop up. And you'll see the purple color, turtle coming up, blue sea, and yeah. everything. So now your question is that, okay, how many layers are there and what we are supposed to be doing in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
The good answer, I would say, would be, what is the first idea or the purpose of your being aware?
Mm.
What you are doing there? Why you want to sit down there?
Mm.
So if you don't have any kind of particular aim, goal, then what happens? This subconsciousness starts to float up all the way in the upper layer, into the conscious layer. Because you are there with your consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
In meditation, when you say you are conscious, then this subconscious mind slowly come up into the surface. Either you fall asleep, most of people, like when they meditate, they complain, or they say like there are so many thoughts, like jachanin and ipaikun. So when you're sitting there, this subconscious layer is slowly now rising up because you are aware, you don't let it to be mind wander anywhere. Then where does mind usually go? It's trained to go into the subconscious state. So it's going there. And slowly trying to bring some things up into the layer. And now you are being watchful of all those things that was stored into your subconscious mind coming up.
Mm.
It sounds that you don't have any particular purpose of meditation.
Exploration.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Exploration is your purpose. So if you have specific goal, specific purpose of meditation, then your mind will slowly go towards the purpose. Rather than wandering around.
Mm.
For example, when you say exploring, it could be a good, but for me, it sounds like I want to do a window shopping, which means I want to go and want to buy, obviously, but I don't know what to buy right now. Let me go and explore. They say, oh, I'm browsing when you go into the store. And it's like, let's see what is there. So what happens is when we are browsing or doing like window shopping, we don't have any specific goal with this. We do have an idea of buying. We want to buy something. And we are saying like, only something that I like it. So we look at this clothes, t-shirt. Well, it's so nice. But yeah, this is not the color that I want. So what your mind is especially telling to you is not to buy. There is a barrier, there's an obstacle coming up, not to buy. And the another product you see and it's like, ah, I like it, it's nice. This is quite expensive. If it were cheaper, I could buy this. So another excuse not to buy. Okay? And this will happen again and again. And the end of the day, we feel so tired, lazy, and it's like, oh, nothing we buy, and then we come because most of the idea was like not to buy, and only the little idea was if something good I come up. If it's really cheap, you know, really something nice, attract to you. So that's what probably happening when you really want to explore in meditation.
I like those bargain deals. And I have a really good cheap idea. Yes.
So see, this happens, but how often it happens? How often you go to the window shopping and you really get what you want to buy in your price?
Right.
Maybe in 10 times, only one time it happens. So when you meditate 10 times, maybe one time you definitely come with a happy mood, you know, like, oh, today I had a good meditation. I came up with this good idea. And so this is what the scenario is for me. But if you have a specific purpose of meditation, or let's say when we're talking about the shopping, if you have a, okay, it's raining and you want to buy umbrella, would you think about buying anything? Any thoughts comes to your head like saying, oh, it's a plastic umbrella? No. Oh, this color doesn't look good, or this is expensive? No, it won't come.
I'm just trying to understand my own consciousness. I'm trying to understand this whole awareness versus the unawareness. And I don't understand the point of what's the point of being able to be so aware in a moment. When you could just be, you know, kind of automatic almost all the time, you know.
The thing is that when we are not able to be here at the moment, then what happened to our mind? Body rest, but mind never rest. Mind is not a matter. Mind is beyond the matter. We haven't found any shape, anything of mind or thoughts, you know. They are not made by any molecules or any kind of matter. So usually they are more subtle. They're very super fine. So they don't rest. So when they don't rest, what happens then? Either they have to go to the automatic mode, or they should be controlled by something like our willpower, our self. Either self is guiding to our mind, or they are made by like an autopilot mode, like a plane or anything you keep on moving. If the pilot is not looking at what happens to the plane goes into the autopilot mode. And when there is a need of to like take off, landing or turning or to do something in a crisis, it cannot help into the autopilot mode. The crisis cannot be looking after the machine, you know. There is a need of a manual. So let's say being aware is like yourself, your willpower is trying to guide your thoughts, guide your mind. Whereas keeping it into the autopilot mode, it could be, as you said, like when you are flying like 14 hours of flight, definitely 8 or 9 hours is in autopilot mode when it's high up in the sky, when there is no problem. Yes, as you said, like being aware naturally is also a good thing. It happens to us. It's not we don't live all life being unaware. It's usually like when we're sleeping or when some interesting thing we're watching or listening music, being into the art or poetic, we become conscious automatically at that moment. But is that enough? Then it's not enough when the crisis comes.
Right.
It's not enough to take off or landing the airplane.
It's interesting how much energy has to do with it, you know, like to be efficient.
For me, like when I do meditation or when I feel like I need to do it, it's usually to stop thinking, like to clear my mind, to rest it. because otherwise I'd be thinking about stuff all the time, which drives me crazy. Insane, or it'll give me greater anxiety and yeah. stuff, right? So, like, aware になることによってそれこそ、こう、まあ、雑念をこう無理に抑えつけるっていうのはまた逆だと思うんですけど、そうですね、なんかこう考えなくてもいいことをずっと考えて、うん、あーとかってなるのを止めるために私はやるっていう感じ、はい、その私のメディテーションのパーパスはいつもそういう感じ。
なるほど。瞑想っていうのことがやっぱりこうみんなお昔からやってきたもんなので、イメージとしてもアイデアとしてもちゃんとこう、まあ、無になるとかっていうのはあると思うんですよ、うんうん、あると思うんですよ。 I would like to say something like okay, 例えば You are eating food. 料理はみんな毎日食べてますね。 If you are eating food all day, then if I ask you to make some food, then probably you can make it because you've been eating this for many many years and you have seen your mom cooking some, your you know, aunt cooking, somebody's cooking, so you will somehow make your food. Either you might say like, ah, おいしくないかもしれないけど、まあちょっとやってみたとか作ってみたとか。 But tell me, what happens if you go to somewhere to learn how to cook properly? If you go somewhere and learn properly how to cook, then definitely you can make some beautiful dishes, nice dishes, tasty dishes. So the problem with meditation also I see is people have been meditating and they have seen someone meditating, even either in the posture or picture or movie or somewhere, or this in temple, you know, their masters or someone. And the first idea of meditation is just to being blank or being, you know, trance immediately. And it is, for me, like people are trying that.
Yeah, so, I think especially in Japan, because of the media and stuff, yeah, like people have this misunderstanding that you have to have your mind completely blank. You can't think of anything.
Exactly.
If you're getting some ideas or images, then you're doing it wrong. and I think there's like this imagery that なんかお寺に行って瞑想してて、はい、ちょっとでも動いたら後ろからこうパシーンと叩かれるみたいな、なんかそういう。
That was my first experience with meditation, though. I was in a karate dojo. And before, I mean, you bow, you go in, and then everyone sits seiza, and then everyone's just quiet for like 5 minutes or something. It feels like forever. And you, your posture is exactly like it is, and you don't... You're supposed to not think about stuff.
Wow. Yeah.
And so the idea is, if you have an idea, just get rid of it. Smack it away and make it like blank again. Because the idea is when you're like fighting someone, you don't want to be thinking like, oh, did I lock the door or something like in the middle of your fight because you're going to lose.
だ
から結構日本で瞑想するのが好きっていうと、ああ私は絶対無になれないから無理って言われるんですよね。だからいや無には私も無は無理なんだけどっていつも思うけど、なんかそういうこう誤解が根付いている感じがする。
大きな誤解があると思うんですよね。だからみんなそう、さっき言った通り瞑想やろうと思って、まあ、とにかく無になろうと思って座ったりとかしてるんだけどなかなかもうできないっていうのがあって、なんでかっていうとちゃんと学んでないよっていうことなんですね。If there is a step, if everything is learning in the life, then how come this meditation is, you know, comes without learning or without understanding it? So what I'm trying to do in Japan right now is I'm trying to tell people that there is a step. If you go through the steps, if you go through the process, then definitely you can have a wonderful meditation experience. And most of time people ask like, 結構その無になるとか考えて。I always give this one sweet example, which is like, for me, thoughts are like a dog. Okay, I give this an example, like a dog. If you, let's say you are going to your friend's place and your friend's place has like a beautiful backyard and the front yard and the big wall window, you go inside and the dog is always open there, keep just playing on the garden, let's say. If you get in and the dog just appear in front of you and then start to bark on you, this is what the thoughts comes usually and started to say something to your head. And you will, now what you would do? You will either run away, okay? Like, oh, I'm scared with the dog. oh, I'm scared with my thoughts. You run away. So what is the result? Dog will follow you.
Mm.
If you run away, dog will follow you. So what happens when you meditation, when you want to run away from your thoughts? Your thoughts will chase you again and again. Okay, now you say like, I love dogs. I'm very dog friendly. And you start to pet your dog, your friend's dog. What happens? Now, dog becomes so friendly, start to play with you. In your meditation, when the thought comes, you like your thoughts, your idea, then what happens? It creates another thought and another thought. You keep on, the chain will start and you keep on playing your thoughts again and again. But what was your purpose? Your purpose was to see your friend. See, if you run away from the dog will chase you and you're far away from your friend. If you play with your dog, you forget your purpose and you're playing with your friend and you feel like, oh, I'm meditating. No, no, no. Again, you start to come back and start to meditate. And these things always happen.
Mm.
So the answer is, okay, what we are supposed to do then? Okay, thoughts comes. My friend has a dog. Okay, what? How do I respond with this dog then? The best way is to ignore. Really? Then yes. See, what happens when dog comes to you, start to bark, you are not afraid of your dog. And it's like, okay, I know you. You are here. You just keep on calling your friends like, hello, are you there? And it will start to sniff around, wiggle your tail and say like, okay, play with me. Maybe it will jump on you and try to draw your attention. Usually dog, that's what they do. And they try to draw your attention, maybe 1 minute, 2 minutes. They go around and around you. If you have a patience to ignore this dog for 1 to 2 minutes, what is the result? The dog is sitting next to you, but he will never bother you. Try this next time. If you really want to try how it you react. Literally, the dog will come, try to scare you. You are not scared. Try to play you. You are not friendly at all. Then it's like, oh, this is so bothering. I am boring. It's just, he's not any more interesting to me. Then he said like, okay, he's sitting right there.
Mm.
And you keep on talking, asking your friend standing there. He will never bother you.
Mm.
So thoughts are like that. Don't try to get rid of your thoughts.
Mm.
Or don't say like, oh, I don't like thoughts in meditation. What do you say to them? Okay, I know this is very important. You want to talk to me. I need to, you know, it might be your family, your job, your new things, new appointment. You are scared. You want to think about it. So like, okay, sit there. Don't go anywhere. Sit there. I'm coming back after what I'm doing right now. After meditation, I'll come back to you.
Mm.
Don't worry. Stay there. I will pay attention to you. Then definitely it will help you.
Mm.
Because this is my very, very experience. These days I don't struggle with these things. I quietly meditate most of the time. But yes, in the beginning stages, I was also like, you know, like everyone's. Yeah. I was also like running away and chasing things. And I realized like this won't happen. I mean, won't help. So the thing is try to ignore your thoughts. And focus on meditation, what you are meditating on. Either it's breathing, image, ideas, object, subject, whatever it is. If you stay there, none of the other thoughts will. But they will come for 1 minute, 2 minutes. You must have this patience to ignore them for 1 or 2 minutes. And this is where the people mostly find the hard time.
Yeah. それが難しいから、やっぱりこう、私はどうしても一人で、勝手にやるのが難しいんですよね、
はい、
だからそのガイドメディテーションとか誰かがガイドしてくれてるやつだったらできるけど、今までこう一人で何も聞かずにできたことは一回もない。
まあそれもその通りですね。最初は多分難しいと思うけど、でもいつまでもガイドになるとまだそれも良くないかもしれないけど、まあできない時には全然それでもいいとは思います。
What do you think about focusing on breath? I hear that as a common technique people use.
Yes, it's a very true. And why is this? It's because our body, the matter, is bound by the time and space. Okay? Matter is bound by the time and space. But non-matter things, such as like our mind, it is not bound by the time and space. That's why physical body cannot go to the past. Physical body cannot experience future. Physical body is always in present. Every single second, the cells is dying and new cells is burning. So the body is always new every moment. And this body is at this moment. It was not a second ago. It won't be a second later. It's just now. But the good thing about mind is not bound by the time. It's amazing, you know. So mind can go to the past, what we call past for the physical sense. And mind can go to the future as well. For example, you can think about what you had last night, dinner. But your mind can only exist there. Your body cannot exist there. Your five senses cannot exist there. You cannot bring this taste, what you had. But you can only bring in your memory. Oh, I had a wonderful dinner last night. So is your body goes there? No, it's your mind can travel to your past and to the future. Today is a beautiful day. It might be going to be beautiful tomorrow. You can imagine, you can have an expectation, you can have this imaginary ideas inside you. So the mind is actually traveling to the past and to the future and can be the present too. But when mind goes into the past or start to think about the future, mind use more and more energy. Mm-hmm. Okay? But when mind is in the present state, the mind is recharged. It's like you recharge your battery or anything. Being present is the recharge time for the mind. Mm. But going to the past, it has to recall, so the extra energy is used. Mm. Going to the future has to create an imagination, so the extra energy is used. But in being present, through the five senses or this awareness, mind doesn't need to work. Mm. Mind can be only there as an observer. Mind doesn't need to create. Like what I had yesterday, mind need to go back and tell you like, oh, this was the wonderful food you had yesterday. How can you forget about this? Okay, just tell you. Yeah. And the future is like, go, you can do this. You can have this. So mind is working extra into the past and the future. But in the present, mind doesn't need to work. Mm. Mind can simply be the observer there.
Mm.
Okay, so this is why from the ancient time, even Lord Buddha, he was doing this breathing meditation. Mm. And what is this awareness? Awareness is something to being present. Okay? So what is we have that allows us to be present? One is our body, as we told. The body cannot go to the past, cannot be into the future. Okay? But the body is very big. Body is so huge. For example, you started to think about your head or your finger or your arms, your legs. Then it associates with your memories again. Oh, I had a headache yesterday, but it's gone now. So see, the momentum you went to the past again from yesterday. So your mind went to the back there because body holds lots of memories. So now the question is like, okay, we cannot meditate right away in the body. If we do that, it's associated with the memories and takes your mind again and again, forth and back, you know. So what about breath? Then breath doesn't hold any memory. You cannot breathe for tomorrow. Can you breathe it for tomorrow? We cannot. It would be wonderful if we could, but no one would be dying, maybe.
Fuck yeah, I can.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
She can hold only. She cannot breathe for tomorrow, too. But yeah, she's a beautiful. She can hold like 6 minutes. That's amazing, crazy. But we cannot use what we have breath yesterday or the minute ago, and we cannot use the breath that we're going to breath for the next half or, you know, later in the future. So breath is the very momentum and has no memory, not like as in body.
Mm.
Oh, then it's great. If you start to concentrate, bring your mind with your breath, then what happens? Mind recharges, your awareness and consciousness goes higher, and it has no memory at all. So this is the best tool we have got. That's why many meditator, many, you know, great master, yogis, everybody just think breathing in techniques in meditation is one of the best tool.
Hmm.
Yeah, I remember, I think you had us doing some kind of, there's some...
alternate nostril breathing.
The thing
is that when we say in meditation, what happens is... meditation is basically from the, as you said, like controlling your thoughts or your mind process, slow down and guide your mind to do what you want to do rather than going into the autopilot mode. It's like more constructive way, more guided way, like because mind has no power. So it's we need to guide our mind. So what happens? Mind is now associated with thoughts and thoughts is associated with our brain. let's come to the physical now. So the brain, there is a left brain and the right brain. Probably you also know that, okay, when left brain is active, we have something, and when right brain is active, we have something. So in the left brain, we are calm, relaxed, good idea, the emotions pop up and things. In the right brain, we are more energetic, active, and then more so many things happening when right brain is active. So can we meditate when the left brain is active? Then no. When left brain is very active, then we have like good emotions coming, or we are very relaxed and we feel sleepy. When right brain is very active, what happens is like so many ideas come, so many emotions comes, which is passionate kind of emotions. Or sometimes we keep on thinking from one to another thoughts. It leads keeps on. Okay, then what do we do? The thing is, in our human body, there is left part, there's a right part. Science has only found this left and right, such as like brain and the whole body, this completely independent. That's why people get paralyzed in one part. Like people can be only paralyzed for the right and the left is completely fine. So it seems that it's completely independent. Though it's one whole body, but inside mechanism, there's completely independent. So if there's independency between the left and right, how does really it work then? Because there must be something to hold it. Something must balance it. If there is a sun energy and moon energy, we call like in Japanese, what do you call like left brain sun, so
sun no uno,
like sun and moon energy. So if there is a right and left, plus and minus, sun and moon, then these are the energy form and it should be balanced by some another energy. Otherwise, it might just pop up and the extra energy might burst up. It's like in electronic wire kind of things. If you are using any high amp kind of things, then they have always like earthing point, which is in the middle, like your fridge or your washing machine and the big machines. Because when the high voltage come, either plus or minus, it might disturb to your machine. It might blow up. So that's why the extra energy should ground it down to the through the earthing so that your product be keep safe all time. So in human body also, yogi, they discover the central path, which we call like earthing into the material wall, it's called susumna. There is one energy. That
susumna.
Susumna, which is in the middle of the spine. And that need to be awakened because that's a more storehouse. It has more power to hold all energies. So when the left and right is too active, bring this all energy towards the susumna and it will completely hold and let that much of energy to go and flow, which is necessary to work, such as left brain should work, right brain should work, but not work overwork so that you cannot meditate. So doing this alternate nostril breathing, like inhaling from your left, holding, exhale from the right, and inhale from your right, retain again, and exhale from your left for the couple of rounds, like 8 to 10 rounds, then slowly your energy will become balanced and it will start to allow your energy to go toward the susumna. What happened after this? You're neither the left or the right is more active. It's more only working to the need level, bodily basic need level, and the rest of energy into the center. And that allows to meditate more easily.
It's interesting that your body manages how open each of your nostrils are.
Yes.
On its own, right?
Yeah.
Like it'll open and close.
Time to time, yes.
Like left and right.
Every 4 minutes, 5 minutes, 8 minutes, there is a different element moves into our nostril in the air.
Yeah, and I've heard that if your mouth is completely covered and your nose is clogged, your body will immediately clear your nose so you can breathe.
True.
It's like, but you couldn't clear it yourself. Like it's not a...
I mean, with awareness.
Yeah. But you were talking about this susumna.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the line that all these chakras
That's
are
right.
on?
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's the place where the human chakras, the body chakras, are stored.
Like when I'm meditating and like すごいうまくいってる時、でいつもなんかわかんないんですけど、この目の後ろ、なんか鼻と目の後ろぐらいのところに、なんか自分の意識があるような感覚があるんですけど、なんかそれがなんでだろうっていつも思ってて。
なるほど。私たちがその瞑想していただいて、あの内側にいろんなものがあるんですよ。内側。でも人間っていうのが、あの五感を持ってって、 五感っていうのはいつも外向いてるものです。五感は内向くことできないんですよ、
うん、
この目でうちのこと見えますかというと見えないんです、
うん、
この耳で体 その何が聞こえますかというと何も聞こえません。この鼻で中のもの匂いますかというと自分の香水してる匂いも匂えないんですよ。この鼻で相手のは聞こえないね、分かるけど。でこの味というのは自分の味できますかというとできないものなんですよ。なんでかというとこの五感というものがもう外に行くために作っているものですと、
うん、
ってことが外の世界のためですよと。 It's for the external world to the outside world、うん、so whatever it's outside you observe through your five senses、
right.
でも私たちの内側にも同じように見えるものがあります、聞こえるものがあります、感じるものがあります。 There is something that we can see inside us and we can feel inside us, we can listen inside us, but not through these five sensesAnd that's what you are experiencing in meditation. There's something you have a feeling of that you are watching yourself somewhere in between your eyebrows, in between. And, well, in meditation, in yoga, we call that's called a third eye.
Right.
第三の目とかっていうのがそういうあのところなので、でそこからやっと自分の見えることができるようになるので。
The third eye is a...It's kind of consistent across a lot of different cultures.
Yeah.
I believe that.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a drawing there, but.
Yeah, the.
the third eye.
The pineal gland.
Yeah, pineal gland.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've heard of some people doing meditation or breathing techniques and stuff, and they claim that they can cause their pineal gland to produce a substance called.Dimethyltryptamine
uh-huh.
or DMT
uh-huh.
And then they'll have like this really crazy transcendent
experience. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
It is possible because it's all about manipulating our body, because after you know more and more then you start to play with that. Okay. It is very true. Like, let's
it's say. Like with types of masturbation or something. If I don't want to compare it that way, but
yeah.
It's kind of this, the control and understanding of your systems,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. True. Such as like you start to ride a bicycle, and at the beginning, you cannot think of like riding bicycle without holding hand, you know, in your... But then after you become a master, I have seen people just, they keep on riding bicycle without holding their hand this. And people ride a motorbike, they do manipulate their even body, like there are so many yogis who can just twist their whole body along, and some people hold breath for a long time. So it's all about after you become master on those kind of things, you know about them, and that's called manipulation of it. For me, it's not that you are great about it. It's just you know the... how to play with it, you know? Mm. So it doesn't mean that you have to manipulate your body and then go for that crazy idea. Like
transit. So do you do that kind of stuff?
Well, frankly speaking, now I'm 42. But when I was 20, I was doing it. I was playing with my body.
Like what?
Well, there are so many things that I tried. I don't know if it's good to say now or not.
This is the best place.
I see.
Yeah, please.
No, when I was like learning so many things from my master, usually they never trained me saying like, you will have this power, you'll have this kind of siddhis. But they just asked me to do certain breathing techniques, certain meditation way. And then I was doing it because master asked me to do, and I'm just doing. And he's not other than my grandfather. So I had a trust and just keeps on doing. Okay, why don't you practice this? Something nice, must be good, nice, you know, just keep on practicing it. So after practicing all those, and one day he came to me and said like, oh, your practice is going very well and it seems that you will have a kind of siddhi. And it's like, okay, what is it? Siddhi is like power, okay? And okay, what is it? And it's like, okay, now you can read people's mind. It's like, wow, okay, am I able to do that? It's kind of, you know, so exciting things for me. Like, yeah, but you need only 21 days, a different kind of practice to do. I was so excited, like, wow, I can read people's mind, you know? And then he asked me to do... different practice for 21 days, and then I did all that, and it's like, okay, now you can read people's minds. Like, really? So it was so much like, I was only like, what, it was 16, 17, you know, I was so young, and then you can imagine like when age of 16, 17, you have kind of power to do, and it's like, wow, this is great. So I started to play with people's mind, you know, like, okay, I can read your mind and doing this and doing that. And I was telling to them, and it's like, some people liked, some people didn't like it because I'm reading their mind. And it made me realize that, okay, what's wrong with this lady? Because I was just 17, 18, and it's like, I can read your mind. Okay, sit down here, close your eyes, keep on breathing. So I just focus on them. I go through meditation and I can see their mind, and it is like, okay, you are thinking this and this and this and that. And like, how do you know? Oh, that's what I learned. I can do that. It's like, but you have no rights to do that. She just, you know, was so angry on me. It's like, you have no rights to do that. Like, okay. And I saw like people were, some were happy, some were not happy, because definitely they have good and bad thoughts both in their head. And I went back to my master and said, like, I don't want this power. I don't want this Siddhi, because this is not helpful at all. Right. Because people are so sad and upset and I'm making them angry, and then this is not good. So I actually had a fight with my master too. It's like, no, I don't want this. And he said like, oh, you're too young. Maybe you're using it in a different way. You're just manipulating it, but why don't you use it in a right way? It's like, how do I know what is right way and wrong way? When people come, I just read there and I can see good and bad, and I explain both. They like good thing, they don't like bad thing. What do I do now? Do I keep bad thing and not to say them, or just to tell them that's a lie? I don't want to do that. I don't need this power. And he says, you're very young. You are angry right now with me. Don't worry. Take your time. You can use it in a good way. So after a couple of months, it's like, please, I don't want this, and just make me set up free. This, I don't want to read people's mind and things. And he said, like, no, you don't need to worry about that. Maybe you are doing it the wrong way. So why don't you do when there is a need? And he said, like, okay, if you already have this power, then now from now, you can only read people's mind when there is a need, not for yourself, not for fun. Not saying like, okay, come sit down, I'll read your mind, you know, and this and that. And I said, like, okay. And I do counseling, Ayurvedic counseling, and there is a need of finding people's body constitution and also the mind constitution, like mental constitution. And I still use those kind of things to see their mind state.
Like, how do you, like, what do you see? Like, in what form?
Or? It comes into the picture sometime. It comes into the voice sometime. It depends. It really depends.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I can sometimes just see the letter going up into their head as well, and I just read this like somebody has written down, and it's just a letter going with combinations.
So you're literally reading.
I sometimes read, I see, I listen. There's a three-way.
That's using my really inner incredible. Eyes.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many things. It's like my grandfather, I was only 11. I was only 11 years old, and we used to live into the mountain house. And in our summer vacation, he used to take me to the mountain house to go and stay there for 1 or 2 months to have a nice vacation there. And those days, we had no transportation to go there. Literally, in a mountain, you have to do the trekking, like climbing up the mountain and go there. Okay. Nowadays, car goes there, so it's fine. But back then, when I was just 11, like 30 years back, nothing. And we had to literally, you know, climb the mountain with a small path, very narrow path, only where the horses can go, or the human being just by foot, they just walk around. So when we were walking around, and I was with my master, my grandfather, and he's like, oh, hold on, I have something to do here. And he just stopped into the in-between, and he's like, yes. And he stand. And there's a big river and the mountain across the river, and we are at this side of the river. And he started to talk. Okay? And I was like, okay, with whom you are talking? You know, there's no one, it's you and me. And he's facing towards the mountain and he's talking to the mountain. And I said, like, are you really talking to the mountain? You know, because I don't hear anything. It's only you. Oh, you don't hear it. Okay, I'll make you hear it. And he just touched my head, and I literally can hear the voice coming from the other side. I was like, okay, is it echoing? Like what you say, the mountain usually echo, throw back. But he's saying something, and the voice, other voice says something else. I was like, what is this?
What were they saying?
They were just saying very usual conversation like us, you know, like, oh, you okay? How are you? And then there says like, oh, there was a heavy rain and we had lost this part, you know, and other than that, it's okay. It was long time to see you. And it's like, really? You're kidding? And then he gave me this technique. and he taught me so many things afterward. So by the time of like 17, 18, not with the mountain. I mean, sometime when I go back there, I do. But that like tree and other things, I still can talk to them.
Like animals?
Not really with animals. I have never tried. I mean, we always had a dog in our home. I can see their emotion. I can feel very much of connection with them, but never had this proper kind of connection, talking to them. But mostly like with the mountains, with the trees, I had proper talking with them.
Wow. Well, no one, not many people are doing this sort of thing.
But yeah, like, the point I'm coming here is like when you have this power, when you have this siddhis, I don't think you should manipulate these kind of things. Because what I have experienced when I was really having fun with this, I was telling to the others and doing all these things. In this whole universe, there is no free lunch. If you are receiving something like those siddhis, that means you are definitely paying for it. Which I didn't realize when I was young. I thought like, okay, I have certain power in me and I can now use it. But once you start to use it, you won't realize at the beginning, but sooner or later you will see how much you are paying for that. And how do you pay that? You pay with in different way. In my experience, you pay through your health, through your family relationship, and it's not only bound to you, it will also affect your all other people around you.
Do you believe in a sort of karma or moral?
I do believe in karma. I strongly believe in karma because none of these things satisfy me when I see someone born with a heavy illness or blind or, you know, physical challenged, those small kids. And I don't see like if this is only one lifetime and if the whole God is made everyone to come here to enjoy their life, how could this kid will enjoy his life, their life, because he's already born blind or physically, you know, disabled and challenged, those kids. How are they going to do that? And nothing comes in my head other than the karma. I'm not saying that, okay, I'm just simply throwing everything to the karma, but what I have realized, studying everything, looking around and doing all these things, it's not the God decide the karma, it's we who decide our karma. When I see someone who is born blind, I'm very much sure that every of us has this strong thoughts, strong, well, we call desire, that will lead us to our new life and the new future. So if somebody is born blind, maybe in their past life, they were gone through so much of pain in their life and they were saying like, oh, this world is just too much to me. I just don't want to see at all. Oh God, just help me. Or just, you know, I don't want to face this world. I have no power, no energy to face this world. That strong emotion, the strong desire, they plant somewhere into them. And now they come as blind to experience the world without seeing it them. And somebody looking at this completely physically challenged, which in the wheelchair all time, this small kid, maybe, I believe strongly on this, that they have probably gone through so much of pain and problem in the previous life, and they were like strongly determined that, okay, I work for you, I do everything for you, I'm doing everything for you, but now I'm completely tired. I have no intention to do anything for all of you. Now my strong wish is you have to do it for me, everything. I'm just sitting here. Feed me, tell me, teach me, do me, everything. I'm not going to do anything. And this is strong wish comes true through that way.
So in your mind, they, like when you see people with severe disability and stuff, like, it's like they asked for it?
Exactly, but unknowingly. That's what I'm going to come to this point now. Why would someone like to born blind? Why would someone like to born like physically challenged? Definitely they didn't want to have weigh that. The only strong desire of them made them that way. That's why we have to be very careful when we ask. We have to be very careful when we say something. This is where the awareness comes. If we are aware about it, we can see something beyond too. We don't only see things in front. The awareness allows you to see further behind. So, okay, if I'm so much of stress now, if I just become emotions and I plant this thought strongly inside me, which will flourish tomorrow in what shape, I don't know. Then that is my ignorance. So the people who are all born like that, I only see the ignorance in them.
So the way you see the world, it's like, it's very empowering to people and people's intent and people's souls and their path through like multiple lifetimes. And their reality now is sort of a karmic a consequence.
Yes.
Like you get what you ask for.
Exactly. That's why I always say to the people that you have to be very careful when you ask. Don't be greedy to ask things.
And for you, when you imagine a world absent of karma, it doesn't make sense.
No,
how can these people be in such horrible
situation
without
any mistake or anything or any
fairness, right?
Yeah. If you think there's only one lifetime, then everyone must go through the good experience in this life, then why these kids are born like that, you know? Why they go through this violence? Why they go through this kind of problem? All those things doesn't really, nothing can answer me. When I see them, start to meditate on them and that situation and see what is the reason behind it, then all this kind of answer comes to me.
That's very interesting. Earlier you mentioned that you have had like your own experience.
Yes. My own experience. Okay, you really want to listen to that?
Yeah, I'm curious.
Okay, well, I had many of them, but I would like to talk today. Well, I'm in Japan, so I would like to talk once. I had it once in Japan. I came here in 2003, December 22nd. I remember the date I arrived in Narita with TG 642.
Wow.
That's my first flight to Japan. So after coming, when I came here, my idea was to have a look around and to see how it is and how people will like the yoga and meditation and stuff. Because we had this ashram and many people used to come and learn for yoga, Ayurveda, meditation. But this is such an intense topic and it needs more time, more devotions and more practice. It can't happen in 1 month or 2 months. So people were going back home with sad faces like, oh, I wanted to learn more, do more. 100 people have 100 problems. Family, job, visa, money, so many. So my grandfather told me that 100 people have 100 problems, so they cannot stay here. But one person, you, if you go there, you can teach 1,000 people. That was the first trigger to think about like going abroad and teaching or sharing my knowledge that I've learned from you. So I tried a couple of other countries before coming to Japan, but didn't work well because I was always appointed to the nice hotel. Usually they ask for the yoga teacher and things. So I was teaching to new faces every 2-3 days. It's like, oh, this is what I am here? So I said like, no. So I went to Singapore, I went to Thailand, I went to Korea and came back home after two, three months, like, no, I don't want to work there. I don't want to be like that because I want to teach something. Not like a physical instructor or something like that. So I started a new branch of Arogya Ashram, our ashram in Nepal. It was in a touristic place called Tamil. And somehow Japanese people gathered to my classes early morning, 6 in the a.m., like 10 of them. And I saw them, it's like so sincere, so, they were not asking many things but doing all things. And after 2-3 months, everybody says like, oh, my back is fixed. I don't take any sleeping pills. Thank you. It's like, oh, these people are really nice. And I thought of like, why not to go to Japan then? So I started to look for the opportunity. I applied for a couple of studio. Nothing worked. Only one replied. I came. I tried. But then for 6 months, I was no job, looking around, going and trying to fix what's going to happen. But I got an opportunity of different other jobs. I'm already graduate from the business school as well. I have other certificates. But then I said like, okay, if I go for the other job, other than the yoga, and I was sitting into the Shibuya Scramble crossing and looking all those people crossing that scramble, like where you have connecting path from the Yamanote to Keio Sen Street. Yeah, many people go. I was like sitting there and, well, not meditating, but meditating on the people walking around like, okay, what I'm going to do? Yoga is not helping at all, because I was going to the every yoga studio and showing my certificates, because I have done PhD in yoga. I'm doctor in yoga, and I have my Nirmal Yoga. I'm a founder in it. And all the graduation from early age, from ashrams, all certificate, and they were saying like, no, no, no. Because you don't speak Japanese, and you already have your own way of doing. If you want to teach here, you have to teach our style, like the yoga style or Ashtanga style or the other one. Or you can, if you want to rent our space, you can rent it out. And I was like, I'm not looking to do that, you know. I don't want to rent because I don't even speak Japanese, and I don't know how to run. So I felt like, oh, this is not happening. So now I really need to decide. I'm going to stay in Japan or go back home, like from other countries. Like I was tried 2, 3, 4 months. And I came back home after meditating in Shibuya, Scramble Crossing, and seeing like, if I go to other job to just live in Japan, I'll be like them. But I came here to teach them, not to become them. So I don't think I'll go to the other options. Now, only option for me is if I can teach yoga, meditation, I'll stay. Otherwise, I won't stay in Japan. I came back home next morning. I started to meditate. Usually, I don't ask for my God or my master anything, you know, like unless there is a need. But this was like something I couldn't come up my answer what to do. So I had feelings like, no, I need you guys help. You know, you really need to help me. So I did very deep, intense meditation, about 3 hours or something, and then just focusing on that, like, okay, why I am here in Japan? And I'm going to stay here, or it's better for me to go back home. That's the only thing keeping in my head, subjective meditation. I, in this subject, started to meditate more. I was like, okay, why I'm here in Japan? And something really nice happened. God helped me. My masters, they helped me. And there I experienced my past life coming Japan. And the exact date was 524 years back from the time I was meditating, which is like 13, 14 years back. So let's say 540 years back, I was in Japan. I traveled from the Himalayas. I came to Japan and I walk around to the Koyasan, Osaka, and went up to the Koyasan Hill. And in their one temple, I was teaching. And also for there was small, like a royal family's place, I was teaching to them for 8 months. 8 months. Walking around, going to the temple and teaching from the mountains. And after teaching all 8 months, it was time to go back home. So I came down to board the ship. So when I came down, many people came along and say like, oh, you are the guy from Himalayas, from mountain, please teach us something, teach us something. And I said like, I'm sorry, I have to go now because I'm only here for a short time period and it's time to go. And they said like, no, how can you do this? How can you only teach to those great people up there and not to teach to us and just go back home? It's not fair. And it's like, sorry, this is the time for me to go back, and I'm literally sorry, I cannot do this. And they said like, no, you have to teach. And I made one promise to them, I will come back next. And this is after 524 years back, you are back here.
What took you so long?
Yeah, and it's like, this is the time for you to keep your promise. And just miracle happened. A week later, where I was struggling for my job and everything, one lady pop up from nowhere and asking me, oh, would you like to teach yoga? It's like, I'm dying to teach yoga. How often can you teach? Every day. Really? Can you teach like 3 classes a day? And it's like, wow. And there were the Melobote Daikinyama. The studio was open. And I was the first to hold the media. It was 2004, November 17, the first day when she called all the media. And I was teaching 3 classes a day. From there, I started, like I said, I just don't want to teach yoga, but I want to do the teacher's training. I want to really teach yoga. So it's all your studio. So I started teacher's training from there. They opened another studio in Ajabu Juban, and I was looking after there too. And in 2007, I started to open my own studio. So yeah, that's my past life experience. I had one in Japan. And after that, I see so many people, I can immediately recognize them like, oh, at the past time, he was there or she was there and doing this and this. And very interestingly, Well, I decided at the time that I'm going to stay 8 years in Japan and keep my promise to see all those people and then teach them. And after that, we relocated to Australia for 1 year in 2013-14 and then came back from 2014 again to Japan. I thought, like, now I have seen all of those people back then. But interestingly, like 2 months ago, I met one lady. I don't want to say in 1 year, this is kind of, yeah, popular lady. She came as my private meditation class, and I was teaching one-on-one private meditation. She was in like Savasana, and I was like kind of healing process to like in meditation. And somewhere, like, she just appeared to me, and it went back to the past life again, that this lady actually feed me one meal at the time of that Koya-san when I was in back, coming down there. See, I could see, like, she coming up with food and then giving in front of me and waiting all time until I finished the food and not much of communication because of the much language and things, you know. And then she was, like, all time looking it until I finished and taking it. It's like, oh, she fed me at that time and now I'm paying back her, like, teaching meditation to her. So sometimes still people appear in my daily life. Like,
you see it as like people, the same souls are here from like very, very, very long time ago. Yeah.
They have the particular character. Sometimes they are with the same face as well, but sometimes they don't resemble the exact face. But there are so many things that you can see because we have a 5 layer of our body. The one we call this is a Annamaya Kosha, the physical body appearance. And the one layer behind that is called a Pranamaya Kosha. And behind that, there is a Manomaya Kosha, the mind body. And beyond that, there is an intellectual body. And beyond that, there is a, we call ego body or the subtle body. So the subtle parts never change. The only physical appearance do change. And sometimes even they remain same.
So in different lives, the same souls are attracted to each other, like they meet up, and
it's not, there is no one principle works in this whole universe. That's my realization. Okay. I can't say like, oh, you will meet or there is a destiny and this will happen. Unless we become aware, we might say those things, but when you become fully aware, you'll find the world is completely different place.
I see.
Yeah. But it is true. We live here. We do definitely anything that you have inside and your thoughts will definitely attract to the others. Like if you have a sadness inside you, you'll definitely see somebody who is sad out there. But if you have happiness inside you, you have, you'll first see the someone who is happy there because this is all connected.
What do you think of the Tao? Or the Tao of the ancestors. I think this is an idea that comes from Buddhism, maybe?
Or Hinduism, yeah.
And the idea is that, I guess we're sort of, everyone's a version of people that existed in the past.
Yeah.
And over hundreds, thousands of generations, people have kind of figured out the most efficient way to do something. And that most efficient way is like, is sort of the Tao way of like kind of letting things happen naturally or something. I'm not sure I'm understanding the concept correctly.
Yeah, because I mean, the good thing is that, we have so many, philosophy or principle, you know, and let's say like we're talking about yoga and meditation, and how could the people in those age, even in like Lord Buddha was 2,500 back. So how in 2,500 years, what can you imagine? How would be the world look like? Because we are only talking about this 50 years or the 100 years, you know, even they call the, what are the revolution happens is like what, industrial revolution. Maybe 250 years back, people had this industrial. Before that was like agricultural revolution. People started to have agriculture and things. And then comes the industrial revolution. And after industrial revolutions, there are so many like electronical revolutions, the technological revolutions. Now we have this IT revolution, internet revolution. So it's all these things is only taking place in between of 200 years, 300 years. So simply think about it. what was there before that? Okay?
Not much.
That's what we think, yeah? Yeah, but in reality, like when I was in Koyasan too, and they had this 1,200 years of the ceremony happening 3-4 years back, you know, who established the Koyasan things. And those big rocks, those big kind of statues and those things, even nowadays, till today, you have to go through this cable car high up. Mm-hmm. We have developed the cable car. You can go there, but there is no other way to get there. Okay? Even the car should be carried on the cable car and get there. They have a road there. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how could they do all this kind of constructions and all this stones which is carried down by there? If you look at the ancient temple, like we, which has a history in Nepal, especially we have like 500 years back, the royal palace kind of things, and 3,000 years back when Lord Buddha's everything, we still have it. So people were already civilized there. People had all this ancient technology with them. People had all this idea, the architect, if you look at those. And then simple mind cannot think about it. Even today's mind cannot think about, like, how could they do there? So this revolution that we're talking about, or the idea or the concept that we're talking about, for me, is like everything is round. Everything is going and coming back again and again. Because whole universe is all like an, you know, oval set. It's around. Earth is spinning all time. The time is also spinning all time. Everything is going and coming back at the same place. Then how come this, our innovations, idea, or the human consciousness is only going like forward and not revolving around something? That always I think, you know, it's like, really, our consciousness, we talk about consciousness all the time, the mind and our you know, the technology and things, and we think like we are the advance. Maybe our father were talking, they are the advance. My grandfather was talking like they were the advance, and so on, the, you know, all generations. But in reality, if everything is revolving, if some everything is moving, then the consciousness, the idea, the innovation is also revolving there. If it's something like this round shape, and you are here standing, and you see something behind there, like 5,000 years, does that mean that you are ahead, or you are also chasing that 5,000 years old revelation and things back? Because you're going back to the same spot. So for me, like all the ancestor, talking to them or praying to them or the evolution them and thinking this them, it's all actually we are chasing to them. We are going around. I don't see that we are advanced. I see we are maybe more backwards, and we're trying to find something different, something new. Because if anything that we create now, the creation that we had made had only very short lifespan. Everything is changing in 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. Everything we discover, first they say like, oh, this is my discovery. 10 years later, another scientist comes to like, no, you are wrong. This is a new theory. New things is happening. But what about those ancient theories? They are still there in 2,000 years back, 5,000 years back. Why? Because they can hold. They have this power to sustain them. And we are trying to follow them, not to creating any kind of new things. So our, yeah, the idea, the concept, our ancestors, all those things, I think we are revolving there again and again and trying to chase them.
I think there's definitely something cyclical about time, and you know, it's peaceful, and then because it's peaceful, people get bored, which causes, you know, unrest, and then there's a huge war, and then everyone now has fresh information, like, oh, we shouldn't do that, and so it goes back to peace.
It's very true.
And so there's kind of a these cyclical things. You see it in fashion. You see it in
a lot everywhere.
Yeah,
I mean, even you see in the civilizations, like now, you know, people first were living in the mountain, and then they think like industrial revolution happened, the technology came, everything, the people started to move in the city, and now people have started to moving back again to the, oh, let's go to the nature, let's have a mountain house, and let's buy something there and go back there.
It's time to go back.
Exactly. Before, you wanted to have someone to serve for you, but now you think, oh no, if I grow my potato, that tastes more tasty to me.
Yeah.
I don't know if it is tasty or not, but it tasty is me. You have this feeling, your idea.
Right. Yeah.
So that's why I say to the people that the most important thing is in our head. Mm. Okay, and that need to be developed more, not the outside things. Mm. For example, people talk about the happiness and they ask me like, what is happiness and how do you define happiness, you know? Then happiness is actually inside us. Happiness is inside us. It's not outside.
Mm. Mm.
And they say like, how? It's like, look, think about yourself. What makes you happy? Think about yourself. Oh, I am happy if I eat good food. Okay, what is good food for you then? Define. Well, I love this and that, like, okay, pasta or bread or this organic, these things. So if the food contain happiness, then every single person who eat this food must be happy. Ideally, logically, okay?
Yeah.
But why is that only you are happy? And then I see the process. The idea comes inside you. Oh, if I can eat that particular restaurant's pasta, it's so good. Before eating that, you are putting your thoughts into this pasta, this food. And now the time you eat, your thoughts is coming back. It's like, it's really good. I love this. And that is giving the satisfaction to you and kind of happiness to you. And you feel like, oh, I'm so happy today. I could eat this. So it's actually, you're putting your happiness from inside to this food and taking it back again. Mm-hmm. If you look at this process again and again every day, if I go to the ocean, that will be very happy. Let's go to picnic today. Let's go to mountaining today. Let's go to the sunrise today. So you put idea first. If I can do this, will make me happy. And you do that and you do feel happy. It's true. You are feeling it happy. But what is the process? The process is that you first put it and take it back. The yogi sitting here realizes, if I put there, take it back, that's nonsense. It doesn't make sense to me. If it's inside me, why don't I be happy here? I'm happy. You meditate on that and you feel happy inside.
Hmm.
Mm. Well, you can also create opportunities to make yourself unhappy.
Mm-hmm. Very true, because it's from inside. You have an idea, oh, I don't like that crowd. If I go there, I'll become crazy. Yeah. Actually, you won't be a crazy if you go, but you already insert this idea like, oh, I don't like that place. I hate these people. I hate this person.
Hmm.
From the beginning, you resist. Like, I don't want to see him. I don't want to listen to him. I don't want to talk to him. I go there. I'll look somewhere else. And you're just fighting with someone, you know, with energy and this. And that is actually making you sad and unhappy. Because this, you planted and taking it back.
I think that's happening with social media as well, right? The negativity and stuff. Like, if you really look at yourself and your life, maybe like everything is fine, like and you're safe and everything healthy, but then, you know, sometimes you're looking at your phone and on social media someone's saying something or someone is attacking you, and suddenly you're stressed out and you're not happy and it feels like everything is shitty. And it's just an idea in your head, but it really affects your mood and how you look at your life. And
that's where the awareness comes. We were talking before. Mm. If you are not aware about those things, then what happens? The automatic mode is on. Your subconscious mind is resting there. So any information that you receive, immediately you'll start to respond on them. We were talking earlier, mind is not capable to see good or bad. Mind is not judgmental. Mind has no power to judge. The judgmental is yourself. The judgmental is your will. The judgmental is your intellect. The judgmental is your ego, not the mind.
Mm.
People think mind is whole, one thing. But inside mind, you have this small chamber and it influenced by your intellect and your ego. So if you are unaware about it, then anything can affect immediately to you.
Mm.
But as you said, that if your awareness is higher, then even the information comes, you will think in different way. How different? You will think like, first of all, this is social media. Second of all, this experiment probably have done into this certain few people. And another thing, they are sowing what they want to sow. There are so many things happens. Okay? So if you are aware about this, your awareness is heightened, and then you can stop those things in between and not let you to affect.
Mm.
But if you're unaware person, you're just simply living a blissful, happy, simple life, you know? And this is the big problem. I see when people started to come to me and start practicing meditation and yoga, and they say like, oh, I become, you know, more sensitive. Because they have calmed down this noisy mind, but they have an access to the subconscious state with awareness. Mm-hmm. They are letting their subconsciousness just to be right there. Then these things come up, and they feel they are more sensitive about it.
Mm.
So the most importantly, they need to find the right way to practice yoga, right way to practice meditation. 本当に正しいやり方でやらないと、もう常に常にみんなやったけど、ちょっと迷ったりするとか、離れたりするとか多い。
Mm.
That's why I say like, do it in a proper way. And if you are fully aware about it, then...As you said, like those social media won't affect you.
Right.
But if you're unaware of it, then your subconscious mind is active and immediately say like, really, you trust, you believe? Your mind says, yes, yes, this is true. Go for it.
right. Yeah. It's, I mean, I try to remind myself to...be mindful. Like mm-hmm. it doesn't come naturally to me mm-hmm. still. Like it's an ongoing exercise or like training.
See, I told you one thing. I'm sorry to interrupt you here, but as you said, like if being aware become natural process to you, then that's wrong because that comes from your subconscious mind. It's like
right.
the one example I gave you, going into your platform, to your daily job things, that is a stored memory. If you think that you will become one day and run through the stored memory to your being conscious and awareness, then again it will become subconscious mind.
True. So I guess it's okay that...
Every single moment you have to be aware.
That I have to remind myself.
Yes.
Well, that's good
that's
to know.
That's the best
way. That's good to know.
That's the best way.
Hmm.
Because that is what happens when people start to meditate.
Hmm.
They go into the wrong path. They think that this has to be so natural and
right.
has to be subconsciously. They have to practice this. If you do that, then you lose the control from your conscious mind.
True. So, cool.
So
that makes sense. That's great to know.
I feel there's something about the way that yoga practice, like, flows or the way the breathing is timed with the positions that really sort of feels like it smoothens out my my thinking.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been doing yoga recently and just watching this video of some YouTube girl named Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
But she said something at the beginning of one of the videos, she was like, the hard part's already done. You know, you're here. And I felt like that was really true. Sometimes, like, for yoga, it's like just showing up. As soon as you start, you can kind of let the automatic parts move your body and you just focus on when you're breathing and on your actual technique and stuff, and like the physical, the breathing, the moving can feel meditative, if that makes sense.
Well, you know? Yes, I understand. I mean, in the ancient time, people had very nice life in ancient time. Okay, it seems maybe they have a hard time. But the mind-wise, they were so cool, mind-wise, because they only had limited things to do. They are following their ancestor
mm-hmm.
and just do, like, if you have a land, crops, business, whatever, you keep on doing the same thing, very simple thing. Maybe life was hard, not like comfort as we have now, but mind-wise, it was so cool. So... how does this mind work, actually? The mind is actually going into the very tough, which is negative mind, and one goes to the positive, which have to be pushed itself towards the positive way. So I see in an ancient time, the people had very relaxed mind. So that's why they were given kind of very hard practice to I would say, like torture to their mind, like this kugyo mitaina kanji, this goku, all the penance practices, like, you know, cold water and takimi and then bare feet, eat only one time a meal and
hot
do
coals.
Is, yes, huh? It's all actually physically, it has nothing to do. It's all about the mind, if you look at this.
Mm.
They were training their mind because mind was too relaxed all the time. Don't want it to do anything. And it's just relaxing there. It doesn't activate. So if your mind is in one side, in the one corner, but you are trying to bring your mind into the center, then you have to always push this mind to the other side. So when mind started to go to the left to right, right to left, it keeps on moving all the time. Then only it can find the central value.
Hmm.
Oh, I should rest here. I should relax here. Or this is my place. I cannot be here. I cannot be the other side too. Okay? So that's why there were so many hardship practice. So you have to go high up in the mountain. There is no good facilities for you. And only one time meal. You have to bake. And you don't know you are going to eat tomorrow or not. And keep on practicing. Listen to your master. And no, even bare feet, walk around. Like all these practices were for the strong mind. But these days, is the other way around.
Hmm.
The life becomes so comfort that you have all the comfort that you can ask for. If it's too hot, oh, air conditioning is on. It's too cold, again, the heater is on. You are inside. Yesterday was a big typhoon. We were safe, sound, and sleeping well.
Hmm.
Okay? So comfort. But look at our mind. Mind is going through this so hardship.
Hmm.
Maybe our mind is more towards the so negative than ever in the history.
Hmm.
Because today, even living your life itself is a penance, is a kugyo mitaina kanji. Mo taihen. Everybody is suffering. Everybody have anxiety, fear, you know, nervous breakdown. They are worries all time. They are panicking. They don't know what's happening tomorrow because no security about job, no life, no family, no marriage, just nothing. But the life looks so beautiful. You have a good clothes, nice food to eat, nice home, nice car, like every luxury that you want physically. But mentally, going so hard. Now, that means they are experiencing every day the hardship of their mind. So this mind, to go into the center, what they need is to let it go. Relax. Don't worry. So there comes your yoga practice and your teacher saying okay, being present and don't worry about it. Look, everybody's talking about mind and saying like, it's fine. Relax. Breath.
Yeah.
And let everything keep outside.
Pat
this
yourself
is your
on
time.
The
back. Yes.
Yeah.
See, this is what I see that, okay, this is a need actually because our mind is going across all the way and to bring it into the center, they need to give a bit of calmness to the mind, a bit of relaxation to the mind. Otherwise, it cannot come. If you think about teaching yoga like the way, well, I was practicing or my grandfather was practicing, then it's difficult. If you think about you want to also do like what Lord Buddha did, he has to do that because he was a prince. He born into the royal family. He had all the luxury. His mind never experienced any kind of pain. He was so food lover. So he need to fast for 20 days, 30 days without food so his mind can come into the center.
Hmm.
He was having all the luxury life. That's why he need to go into the jungle alone and then have nothing in him and see how does the mind react on that.
Hmm.
But do we need to do that? Our mind is already stressful.
It does seem like, you know, we're focused on training our bodies and, you know, resting and taking care of nurturing our minds, you know, because we don't do any physical
activities.
Training.
And so, I mean, as you said, it's really interesting that on the internet and on YouTube, like you said, or in social media, like we always see these positive messages, right? Like, it's okay, you're doing great. And the fact that so many people need this just by living a normal life.
Yeah.
That says a lot.
Instagram is all like motivational stuff.
Yeah, like you're doing great. Don't be too hard on yourselves. Yeah. Like because everyone is hard on themselves. And
yeah, but if you go to like one of these Buddhist temples or something, these monks are like, they're doing hard work, you know, hours and hours and hours of like mental, you know, whatever, like
balance, yeah.
Yeah, reading these things.
So we all are different. We live in a different atmosphere, and we are all grown in a different atmosphere. So we all needed to treat ourselves in a different way. And most of the people now are suffering from the mental hardship. So that's why those people need to more relax, more calm down.
Right.
If I ask them to go and do all the pressure that I was doing, or maybe the ancient master were doing, like all the penance practice, going into the Himalaya and being naked almost, you know, in the only one piece and in the cold, and you just meditate there or hold your breath for longer or just not eat anything and fasting for like 20 days or 21 days, it doesn't make sense. Because mind is already stressful. They need more the other way side of like comforting them, relaxing them, saying it's okay, it's fine. Believe me, I was not like this. I was very arrogant in my age of 20. I was so hard to my all students. And so like, if you cannot practice, go away. You have no space in my class. But I became very kind. I become so kind because I realize that okay, they are already going through so much of its, you know, hardship, and there is no need, their mind need to come back into the center. They're already pushed through their whole life,
right?
You know, they don't, they have no even limit to go beyond that. Like they will crash if they go beyond that.
Yeah, 確かに今こう毎日会社に行ってもうすごいストレスでこう。まあ、家族とかいろんな関係があってストレス抱えててヨガに行ってヨガの先生にめちゃくちゃ怒られたらもう泣いちゃう。
そう、行くところがないよ、ね、最後の行くところヨガに来てたのに
確かに
先生がもっと強いこと言われたらもう困る、
ね、困る確かによかったじゃあ
So what you said, Michael, is very true, because people need comfort there and to just being themselves, thinking about their breath and being present will slowly allow their brain to come back into the center. That's why people feel immediate change on them. They immediately feel, even after one class, they feel like, oh, I feel so good. Because you have pushed yourself and you're coming back into the comfort zone. So you'll feel the difference.
But you can also pay attention to what you're doing too, you know, because everyone, at least around here, people are on their phones all the time, their screens, or you're traveling somewhere, or you're always distracted by something. But when you do yoga for like 30 minutes or an hour, you're not doing a, you're using your hands, so you can't like look at a, you know, no notifications or anything like that too. So I think that's a very good aspect of it.
It is, because when you become close to the nature, you become close to yourself. Okay? Because we are part of nature. We are made of nature. We are born with nature. That's why we live with nature, which is food comes from nature. Air comes from nature. Water is nature. Sunlight is nature. Can you live without food, water, sunlight, breath? Then no. So the more you go distracted by the nature and go far away from the nature, that you'll go far away from yourself too. So like today's distractions, such as we were talking about the technology and the social media, everything, these are unnatural. It has nothing to do with nature. That's why even today's day now, people start to make their furniture and everything. So they call, oh, this is breathable. And it's like, what are you talking? How can this breathe? I know the air can go. And it's like, no, no, touch, sensei, touch this wood. And can you feel the breath? Yeah, I can feel that, but okay, this is what you mean by breathable. Okay, that, and then I understand. Okay, now they are saying, if you are, like, definitely, this is plastic. If you hold it, you don't feel anything. I can feel the coldness of the water, but not the plastic. But if you've touched in the chair, you can feel. Your five senses are more active with natural things than unnatural things. Your brain can be active with unnatural things, which is now a VR that we are talking, virtual reality things. But that's not the five senses. It's your brain only. Because brain, as we earlier talking about, it has no ability to discriminate, to see which is good or bad or yes or no and right and wrong. So that's why it just observe everything what it sees. But five senses, no. They are always with the nature. So the more you go toward the anything which is natural, not only your material things, but beyond that, what are the nature? The nature is like we were talking happiness, peace, calmness. This is what we call a nature. That was we are born. But unhappiness, sadness is not our nature. We are not born with unhappiness, sadness, pain, or stress. This comes from unhappiness, comes from the unnatural things. So if people start suffering from this unnatural way, then they need to find a natural way. We are born with love, compassion, and these are the nature, human nature, inside us. So that's why in yoga and breathing and things, we just, when they are in the room, in the class, in the yoga mat, we ask them to go to the find yourself, love yourself, care yourself, see yourself, feel yourself. This is actually, we're trying to get them to more close to the nature. So the more and more you come close to the nature, more and more you come close to yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, I say this sometimes, but I feel like we're living in Disneyland.
Yeah.
You know, Tokyo is like Disneyland,
very
right?
Very much, yeah.
You know, all of this stuff wasn't here before,
yeah.
You know. And you have people with white gloves on, like, open the door for you and stuff.
Yeah, our minds definitely need to rest. I mean, meditation and yoga, and for me, like, riding a horse or, you know, scuba diving, like that kind of stuff also gives me the similar effect. Like my mind is totally focused on the present.
And you can even walk in the nature, you know, like walking the barefoot in the green grass, going to the jungle, swimming, playing with water, sunbathing. These are all close to the nature.
Right.
One thing interesting about nature is it has like infinite detail.
Yeah.
So if you take anything from nature and you look under it, you look really close, you look under a microscope, you keep going closer, it still looks beautiful if it's a shell or a leaf or anything. But artificial stuff that sometimes it looks like it's natural, but if you look really closely at a microscope, there's so many flaws. It's so ugly on the microscopic level. There's so many imperfections. But all the things that are artificial are made for our eyes, our eyesight, you know? So it's like, it's all hidden.
Right.
But if we had like microscope eyes, then it would be like gross. Like, what is this cheap, like horrible looking thing?
Yeah. That's why to find how beautiful is the nature, I always ask them to observe nature more and more, look at them more and more. And I say like, okay, if you go to the ocean or in, you know, aquarium, look at those fish. And look at their color. Have you ever seen the same kind of color in the artificial life? Like you have a cloth, you have so many stuff around you. Can you find the same yellow like this beautiful fish? The blue color, look at this small blue fish in the ocean. I have never seen.
Yeah.
Not in my t-shirt or not in my pajamas, not in my things around me in my house, you know.
Yeah.
No matter how much hard we try to make this, we cannot make it how the nature made it. The way nature makes is all different. As you said, like it's all from the beginning, it is from the purity. The pureness is there. The root is the essence itself is from the nature. And all the way that outside it reflects, it's all from the nature. So if it's inside good, we'll slowly project outside good and then radiates more and more and more. When it becomes final product, like either it's a face or flower, you have seen lots of flower. Can you think and imagine the color of this flower or the essence of this flower? Can you find in your clothes that you printed or anything like crayons and color or wallpaper or anything? Then no, we cannot.
No.
Because that is made from the nature and the nature has this own quality which can flourish more and more. Even you have a microscopic eyes, you go more deep, you see more beauty in it. So that's because the nature has this power. And the natural things has like another more power is like it's self-sustained. Now we are having so hard time that, okay, we made some unnatural things such as like plastic. I was in TED the other day we had a 10th anniversary, and then I was, and guy was talking about like in another 15 years there will be the plastic in the ocean which weigh equal to the fish.
Mm. Wow.
So the half of fish, half of plastic.
That's crazy.
You know? So like, okay, why it's not dissolving? Because this is not nature made, and nature is not even observing it. And it's like, no, I don't want to take it back. It doesn't compost. It doesn't go back into the nature. So the good thing about nature is that it has its own power, and it has its own like a cycle. It knows that what we call ecosystems. Like it knows how to sustain. The sustainability is inside the nature. That's why it's been spinning, I don't know, many, many billion years, and still keeps on spinning in the same pace. So that's why if we go back to the nature and see the nature, we'll see the truth.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah,
it's, I mean, it's hard living in the middle of Tokyo, but actually since I have my son, I take him outside. So I end up being outside way more than before, like in the park and stuff. And that's actually really nice, like to touch the grass and even in the middle of Tokyo, you know, there are actually a lot of trees. And
see, if we have a mindset that I want to do, then the opportunity comes to us. If we have a mindset like not to do, then so many obstacles we feel like, oh, this is Tokyo, I don't have this and that. Believe me, I do earthing and grounding. I have this flower plant base in my home. No plant at all, only mud in it. And I ask my daughter to stand on that. I stand on that. Though we have a very nice park nearby, but still we want to do that at home. So like no excuses.
Right.
If you have a good intention to do something, you'll find the way.
I love going to nature, actually.
Yeah.
I went to a valley near Todoroki.
Recently. I know. It's a very beautiful
place. Totally hidden.
Yeah.
Like you would never suspect it was there. And it's so like in Tokyo, there is actually some beautiful nature, but it's kind of hidden.
Well, I have to go pick up my son.
Oh, sure, sure.
I'm sorry, but...
No. Thank you for your time. Even I have to, slowly leave because I have another appointment.
And,
Thank you so much for coming. I think we learned so much about...
Thank you for having
Nepal
me.
Nepal and Hinduism, or what's it actually called?
Sanatana.
Yeah, Sanatana. And,
reincarnation.
Well, it was actually my pleasure, and thank you for having me here. And I'm happy to come back again if you guys.
Yes, please.
Because there are so many topics we can talk about.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Not only
thank
one.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you so much.
Arigatou gozaimashita.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.